Absolutely. Me too.
House Committee on Judiciary coming to order. Today is Tuesday, February 28th. This seems like a long month, not a short month for some reason, but whatever. First item on the agenda, we'll open a work session on possible introduction of committee measures and a qualifying statement. A vote in favor of introducing a legislative concept is not a vote on the merits of the concept itself. It is not indicative of the member's opinion or position on the contents of the concept.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move the following LCs to be introduced as committee bills. LC number 2334, which is dated 2/2017, 2569, dated 2/23/17, and LC 3178, dated 2/14/17.
Could you just read the catch line?
There we go. Well, that's what we're doing right now.
Chair Barker, members of the committee. So LC 2334 says that for the purposes of livestock statutes in Oregon's code, it does include commercially bred and maintained parrots.
Okay. I'm sorry, what?
Parrots.
Oh, I did hear that.
LC 2569 deals with the mitigation of costs and care of impounded animals and changes the animals that a convicted person is prohibited from having and changes the length of time in which they're prohibited from having them. And LC 3178 deals with firearm possession by state employees who have a concealed handgun permit.
Mr. Chair, counsel and I have already spoken about this. So the third one, LC 3178, was at my request. And I thank Chana for helping me do that. So I just want to make sure it gets on the record so it's not something okay. that I'm trying to hide or anything.
Not at all. Okay. Okay. Representative Olson moves to introduce the LCs as committee measures. Is there any further discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Thank you. Okay, and we'll open a...
Full disclosure.
Yeah. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2217. Council, please.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, House Bill 2217 deals with guardianships. Now, guardianship is a protective proceeding created in state law in which a court gives a person or entity the duty and power to make decisions for another. A conservatorship is a similar relationship but is limited to financial oversights. Guardians have significant power and decision-making abilities, including housing, daily activity, healthcare treatment, finance, and communication. House Bill 2217 restricts a guardian's ability to limit the communication rights of a protected person.
Thank you. Representative.
Good afternoon, Chair Barker, Vice Chair Olson, Vice Chair Williamson, and honorable committee members. For the record, I'm Gene Wisnett, State Representative, House District 53. Mr. Chair, thank you for hearing House Bill 2217. As you were told, relating to visitation rights for family members at the end of life of family members. I'm sorry to tell you that the people who requested this bill were not able at the last minute to come and testify. The bill is named Falk Alfano Act, requested by Catherine Falk, daughter of actor Peter Falk, and Mary Alfano, the daughter of Benjamin Alfano of Oregon, Portland, Oregon. Both had planned to testify, but at the last minute were not able to be here today. I hope I can convince you how important this bill is to them, and I think an important bill. Catherine is a national activist for guardianship reform and elder abuse awareness. The Catherine Falk Organization has advocated for visitation legislation since 2011. In memory of her father, Peter Falk. Mr. Falk actually was an advocate also for elderly and made public service announcements about elder abuse. The other requester of the bill is Mary Alfano, on behalf of her father, Benjamin Alfano, born in Portland, Oregon. Benjamin served in the United States Air Force as a flight instructor and as an AFOSI investigator. AFOSI is the Air Force's NCIS we're all familiar with, you see on TV. At the end of his life, he suffered abuse in a nursing home without his family's knowledge. Mary describes this in her letter of support, which is in OLIS. I hope you'll read both hers and Catherine's letter. House Bill 2217 empowers the protected person's right to make decisions about who can visit them and who cannot. Catherine Falk's letter describes in detail each section of the bill. I could go over that, but I hope that her letter you'll read those and understand that. The bill requested by Catherine Falk was modeled after successful legislation passed in Tennessee and Colorado. I appreciate the work of Belisa Sindlich with Legislative Council. She worked with Mrs. Falk on this bill using the Tennessee and Colorado bills. I'm afraid I do not have the expertise in gardenership that some of this in this committee may have, or the legal aspects of the bill. But the LC assures me that the bill has satisfied all the legal aspects and is ready to go with the good work of LC. Members, Mr. Chair and honorable members, this legislative body and this committee have been leaders in passing legislation to protect elders. And passing this bill will add to our list of accomplishments. In closing, Mr. Chair and honorable members, I ask for your action to pass this bill.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Representative Wisnant?
Mr. Chairman,
yes, please.
I'm not sure you're the one to answer this, but why aren't these people protected under law right now? Perhaps the council can answer that.
Mr. Chair and Representative Greenlee, I think that this clarifies and gives the family more rights than in present law now. That's my understanding what the bill is doing, is being sure that there's a procedure that you just can't say that the person with the gardenership responsibility just can't say no. There's appeal processes in this bill now for the people to have those visitation rights.
It seems so obvious.
I'm sorry?
It seems so obvious that they ought to have the ability to see who they want to see.
Mr. Chair and Representative Green, I completely agree with you, but that's not the case without some of my attorney friends on this committee could tell you that without having legislation to do that or laws to do that. As I said, the two bills that we use as model provide that. It's a review process. The gardenership still, is the gardener, has gardenership responsibilities, but this gives the people who want to visit more authority to go and appeal the process. Is that?
Yes, Chair Barker and Rep. Greenlee, if I may, right now under Oregon law, the guardian gets to make all of the decisions about who communicates and who can't communicate, who can visit, how they can visit. Sometimes guardians don't put any restrictions on it, and sometimes guardians will put restrictions on who may visit and when. This says that you would specifically need a court order to override the protected person's decision in that matter unless they're unable to express consent, in which case you can use prior information or other evidence in order to make that determination.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. Representative, this is just for set for public hearing today. We didn't
have Mr. Chair, thank you for hearing and thank the Mrs. Newell for helping me out of that. So, but it is a good bill, and I hope the committee will take action to work it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for bringing it. This is a public hearing on House Bill 2217. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2630.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, 2630 is another bill dealing with guardianships. It adds additional protections to the right of the proposed protected person. It requires petitions for guardianship to include what other alternatives might exist, which ones were considered, and why they were inadequate. It also requires 15 days written notice to be given to specified individuals and entities prior to changing the residency or the place of abode of the protected person, and it requires visitors in cases appointing a subsequent fiduciary.
Mr. Jundep, please.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, my name is Bob Jundep from Disability Rights Oregon. Thank you for hearing me today. This bill comes to you from Disability Rights Oregon's long experience in monitoring our guardianship system. DRO has been involved with this process for almost 30 years. Over the course of those many years, I've appeared in front of committees like this one talking about the needs of of people who have guardians or who are proposed to have guardians. And we have changed the process quite a bit over the years. In the late 90s, probably the third effort that we engaged in to try to obtain public funding for attorneys for proposed protected people was unsuccessful. But we and the long-term care ombudsman stepped forward in order to volunteer, essentially, to play a monitoring role for the process. And so since 1999, DRO has received pleadings in cases in which there is a person with a mental health issue or a developmental disability who for whom a guardian or proposed guardian wants to place in a restrictive setting. And so we receive numerous pleadings every month, and we review those pleadings. In the last 2 years, we've been able to compile some data about the work that we do, and I provided you with some background material explaining that. Also out of that process, we've come to understand the types of difficulties that people experience when they are faced with receiving some legal papers in the mail that are hard to understand, but can have a very profound effect upon them, because the effect of a guardianship, as you've heard, is to take away an adult's right to decide where they live, how they get their medical care, what that medical care is, sometimes who they can see, who they can talk to, and how they can live their life. It's a very significant intrusion into adults' decision-making process. And so what happens when we receive a petition, we make it our business to contact the individual to find out if they have any concerns about the process, if they understand the process, if they want more information, if they have any objections, and if they haven't been able to have their objections heard, how they can do so. We don't normally provide direct representation for those folks. We help them to hook up with an attorney through the court in the particular county. On rare occasions, we will provide representation if it's an unusual case. So through this process, we've learned a lot about people's experiences, and that and many of those that knowledge comes to you through House Bill 2630. And so we're proposing six separate fine-tunings, if you will, of our guardianship statute in order to make the process more transparent for a person who may be slated to have a guardian or who has concerns about their ongoing guardianship. So just quickly, I'll do a walkthrough.
Please.
Section 1 talks about the contents of a proceeding, of a petition in a protective proceeding. And it requires that among the factual information that a proposed guardian needs to put forward in the petition explaining why there's a need for a guardianship, that that petition also indicate the alternatives to guardianship that have been considered by the proposed guardian. This is important because guardianship, while a one way to see to a person's needs, may be the most intrusive. In fact, it probably will be the most intrusive legally, but there may be less intrusive ways that the person's needs can be met short of a guardianship. And so this allows, and it prompts the person who is petitioning for the guardianship to explore other alternatives, and if those aren't sufficient, then just to tell the court in the and others in the petition. Section 2 requires that.
Is there any change in Section 1? Is Section 1 a whole new section?
Yeah, there is.
Representative Barker, Representative Greenlick, I didn't.
Page two, lines
3 and 4.
I'm not sure I understood the question.
He wanted to know if there's changes in them.
Is there any change in Section 1?
Oh, in Section 1 of the bill I'm referring
yes.
to.
Yeah, he asked if there was changes, any changes.
The existing statute.
No. Oh yes. The change to existing statute would be a requirement to include a statement of alternatives to the appointment of the fiduciary. Yes.
I missed that. And four. Okay.
Section 2 of the bill requires that notices of motions for the termination of the protected proceeding or for removal of fiduciary or other types of motions include information about how to contact the protected person. So in state statute, there are notice provisions, and there's a group of individuals who need to be notified when a petition is filed, but then there's also a group of people who need to be notified when there's motions in the case, and those can be motions for modifications or changes. Oftentimes, a DRO will receive motions in a case about proposals to change the guardianship power or other types of authority, but that motion will not include any information about how to contact the individual, and then we are placed in a position of having to go through a process of trying to determine where that person is, how they can be contacted, so that we can engage in that activity that I've just mentioned of asking them if they have any concerns about it. Any other of the mandatory recipients of notice in that process would be faced with the same difficulty that we would unless they had independent knowledge of how to contact that person. And so the amendments in Section 2 would allow us and anyone else who is authorized to receive notice in the protective proceeding to know how to contact the person to ascertain what their concerns or feelings are about it. Section 3 has to do with the problem that many people face is that they receive a petition or legal documents in the mail and they have concerns, but they, in order to express those concerns, they have been expected to file a written notice to the court. And as you can imagine, a person, particularly a person under a guardianship proceeding, may not have either the resources or the ability to achieve written notice. And we have had some amendments in the past to allow for oral objections in proceedings, but some courts have raised concerns about how that is done, and there's just been some problems in making sure that courts are open to oral objections. And so what we're trying to do in Section 3 is to allow for oral objections and to urge the courts to create a process so that those oral objections can be recorded and entered into the process so that a person's concerns can come before the court effectively. And again, this is just another effort to make sure that the protected person can effectively participate in the guardianship process if they have concerns or objections. Section 4 has to do with court visitors. When a petition is filed in a protected proceeding, a court will appoint it's called a visitor. The visitor's job is to go out and to interview the proposed protected person and others involved in the guardianship process and to inform the court as to the visitor's view of whether that individual is incapacitated or not incapacitated, and whether the guardian is an appropriate guardian or not an appropriate guardian. As you can imagine, the identity of who may act as a guardian can be a point of contention, particularly when family members are vying for involvement with a person. And it's very important from that individual's perspective that their voice be heard in the process. Sometimes it becomes necessary to appoint a successor guardian, and that means that the person who's serving as guardian no longer wants to be the guardian, has died, or is incapable in some other way of acting as guardian. The law presently allows the court to waive the use of a visitor when there is a successor guardian to be named. And again, our own experience at DRO is that it's very important to have independent eyes and ears on a guardianship situation, and that and with to, and reminding us all that Oregon is unique among the states in that we do not require court hearings before the appointment of a guardian in Oregon. And one of the justifications for that is that the court visitor process has been deemed to be adequate to provide some protections, and so that at least in many views, having pro forma type hearings are not necessary if a visitor has come in and said, no, this person's really incapacitated and we don't need to go through a process that, that would be just formal in nature. Section 5 has to do with a guardian's authority to decide where a person lives. This is one of the most profound authorities that a guardian has, and you can imagine that when a person is being moved, that can be extremely disruptive, particularly for seniors who can experience transfer trauma and all the anxiety and problems that come with moving. This is why we are proposing that that individual receive notice before before moving, and that gives them the ability, if they have concerns about that, to communicate them to the court. If DRO receives notice, that we can talk to the person about their right to object to the court about moving. Again, there's not going to be a visitor involved in a decision to move a person, so there's not going to be any independent involvement for that person other than whatever oversight that's provided by our office.
How in the normal course of events do people get moved, like you're going to move tomorrow, or usually they have a little more time where they would be able to object? I see this requires that, like, I think it says 15 days. So is that common, or does something come up, or they just decide they have to move them? And
we've seen cases in which people are moved immediately. There are people are moved without notice. Someone just comes and says, we're moving today. Okay. And that's how it rolls. As I said, it's one of the reasons that's included in this bill is that it's been one of the most the greatest complaints we've received from protected people about their concern about being moved and not really having an opportunity to voice their objection to that.
But if there was some reason that somebody, like they had a huge mental failure, maybe a massive stroke or something, I guess that would be hospitalization. But if they had a reason where they needed to move them quickly, they could still do that, but they just have to be with talk to the court first.
Yeah, this our intent, and we believe as written, this provision would not affect emergency situations.
Okay, thank you.
And I put that on the record.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
The last section 6, is really another effort to inform protected people that they have a right to have their voice heard in the process. So the way that guardianships work is that once a guardian is appointed, a guardian not only has responsibilities toward the protected person, but they also have a responsibility to the court, which is, and that responsibility is to file a guardian's report once a year to the court. And it requires a variety of pieces of information, because in our system, the court has the ultimate responsibility to monitor the performance of the guardian. This report, like all other types of filings must be served upon a variety of people, including the protected person. So that person has a right to receive the document. What the document doesn't presently say or tell to the protected person or anyone else receiving it is that if they have concerns about the report, they can let the court know, and that so the court could take appropriate steps to resolve those concerns. And so Section 6 would add that provision in the guardianship, the annual guardianship report form, notifying an individual that they have a right to voice their concerns to the court. That is the bill.
Okay. Thank you for the explanation. Any questions? Sold them well. Thank you. Okay, thank you. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2630 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2623.
Just a work session.
Oh, I'm sorry. Close the hearing. Open a work session on House Bill 2623.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, House Bill 2623 heard last week. This does two things. It allows a trustee to charge all of the compensation for the trustee's services or investment advice or custodial services to the principal or the income of the trust in whole, as is appropriate. And it modifies the rules for voiding non-trust property transactions. There is no revenue impact and no fiscal impact on this measure. It's ready to move today if you so choose.
Yeah.
Do you want to do? Sure. We're in work session.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2623 to the House floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Olson moves House Bill 2623 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Discussion. Are there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered.
Excusing Rep. Leininger.
And Rep. Leininger is excused. I don't know. Motion carries. We have somebody like to carry the bill?
I can.
Okay. Representative Williamson will be our carrier. We'll lay you off the hook. We'll lay you off the hook later.
Yeah. Good. Count these up.
Thank you. Any further business?
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
Representative Senator Gelsford.
Okay.
On 2217, but she's not here yet.
Okay. Representative, we're going to hang on. We're staying at ease for a few minutes. We're waiting for Representative or Senator Gelsford. Yeah. Make sure.
I got 150.
Sorry, he's my favorite.
We reopened the Judiciary Committee, come back, call it back to order, and we are going back to a public hearing on House Bill 2217. Senator Gelsert.
Thank you, Chair Barker, Vice Chair Olson, Vice Chair Williamson, and members of the committee. For your record, my name is Sarah Gelser. I'm the state senator from Senate District 8, which includes Corvallis, Albany, Millersburg, Tangent, Philomath, and the unincorporated areas in that region. I am very pleased to support this bill along with Representative Wisnett. We both were contacted by the supporters of this bill, the proponents of the bill. I will admit that I was initially really intrigued by the idea that we would get to work on something here that had a connection to one of my favorite childhood television shows, Columbo, which is pretty exciting. But what is true for all of us is that we have people in our lives that we care a lot about, and every single one of them is going to age. You're going to age, I'm going to age, and as we age, we become very vulnerable. And when I think about being far away from my grandparents or my parents, the importance of knowing that the people that are around them are treating them not just with kindness, but with dignity, honoring their rights as human beings and that basic right to maintain connection and communication with the people with whom they have built their lives and kind of tied up their stories with their entire life. This bill will help to ensure that those with nefarious intentions cannot put themselves in the way of maintaining those very important relationships with individuals who are protected. This basically provides additional protections to protected people. So I would urge your support of this legislation. I'm really grateful to you for taking the time to hear it, and especially grateful to Representative Wisnett for being willing to take the lead and start this bill on the House side. I look forward to hearing your thoughts about it, seeing what adjustments you think can or should be made, and hopefully getting a chance to see it over on the Senate side so we can send it together off to the governor's office. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions for the good senator? Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
We'll close the public hearing.
Senator, are you going to introduce your guests?
Mr. Chair, please don't hit me with the gavel. colleagues and Representative Springer, who would never miss an opportunity to introduce some students, I'm very pleased. My very dear friend John Pugsley is here. He is a recovering political staffer, and he has moved on to education, and he has his Model UN class here today. Do you want to wave your hands, students? And they are from the Model UN class at Ashbrook Independent School in Corvallis. They've been here all day, and I'm pretty sure listened more intently than myself or any of my colleagues on the Senate floor when they sat through the whole floor session and got to share their thoughts on the heavy backpack legislation that we just sent your way, to which I urge your aye vote. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was absolutely.
Sorry, we did have a few more interesting bills for you today for the students. And just the other thing we didn't really talk about, House Bill 2622 is being rescheduled. So no further business to come before the committee. Today we stand adjourned, committee. Thank you. Committee. Today we stand adjourned, committee.